Well, good evening. Good to be here with you. About 6 months ago, they asked me to have a topic, and they said I can choose anything I want. And then I procrastinated, and then there was a new team on the board, and I thought maybe I would slip through the cracks. But that didn't happen, and Brian came to me and wondered if I would do this principles of leadership. When I look back over my life and, I guess some of the things in my leadership I feel really good about, and then there's some things in some of my leadership that I wish things would have maybe turned out a little bit different. But we know that we're going to journey on, and we're going to make the best of it that we can from this point forward. So I'm going to ask you to interact with me a little bit at part of the time, but what is the definition of leadership? Anybody?
Individual brings vision
to a group of people. Okay. Anybody else?
One who shows the way.
Shows the way. Okay. Well, a couple definitions that I found was influence. And another one, the Webster Dictionary said, the office or position of a leader. To give you a little bit of my background, but before I do that, I'm going to read a couple pages from one of John Maxwell's books. How many of you are familiar with John Maxwell? Quite a few of you. I was actually privileged a year ago. He was one of our keynote speakers at our annual meeting in Branson, Missouri, and it was very inspiring to sit where John Maxwell was speaking. John Maxwell is an author, a speaker, and a pastor who has written many books. And the book that I'm going to be reading from a little bit is Developing the Leader Within You. Leadership can be taught. Leadership is not an exclusive club for those who were born with it. The traits that are the raw materials of leadership can be acquired. Link them up with desire, and nothing can keep you from becoming a leader. This book will supply the leadership principles. You must supply the desire. Leonard Ravenhill, in the last day's newsletter, tells about a group of tourists who were visiting the picturesque village. As they walked by an old man sitting beside a fence, one tourist asked in a patronizing way, "Were any great men born in this village?" And the old man replied, "Nope, only babies." Leadership is developed, not discovered. The truly born leader will always emerge, but to stay on top, natural leadership characteristics must be developed. In working with thousands of people desirous of becoming leaders, I have discovered they all fit in one of the four categories or levels of leadership. The leading leader is born with leadership qualities, has seen leadership modeled throughout life, has learned added leadership through training, has self-discipline to become a great leader. Note, three of the four of these qualities are acquired. The learned leader has seen leadership modeled most of his life, has learned leadership through training, has self-discipline to become a great leader. Note, all three qualities are acquired. The Latin leader has just recently seen leadership modeled, is leading to be a leader through training, has self-discipline to become a good leader. Note, all three qualities are acquired. And then the limited leader has little or no exposure to leaders, has little or no exposure to leadership training, has the desire to become a leader, note all three of these must be acquired. The reason I wanted to read that first is because maybe there's somebody in this room, maybe some young person that was a little bit like what I was when I was growing up. When we moved to Iowa, there were just two of my uncles and their families and a single uncle and a single aunt and my grandparents. And we kind of lived by ourselves, kind of isolated. And we might not see anybody outside of that little circle for 2 or 3 weeks. And if somebody showed up that we didn't know there was no way we were going to hang around because we were too shy, we didn't want to talk to them. And when they came in the front door, we went out the back door and we disappeared. So that was kind of my growing up, kind of where I was at. But as we could see in this book, if you are surrounded with great leadership and have had great examples of leadership, then things could change. I think of two great leaders when I was growing up, and one was my grandfather, Gideon Utsi. He was often consulted on biblical matters. And one of the qualities that he displayed, when you would go ask him a question, you would ask him the question, and then he would be quiet for just a little bit. And he was thinking out what kind of an answer that he wanted to give to you. So that really spoke to me that he took a little bit of time to think these things through. And my father, David, was a carpenter. He was the crew leader. And he did that for many, many years. And there was a lot of different people that over the years would come and work for my father. And one thing about him is he never got excited, he never got upset. He just tried to figure it out the best that he could, and he tried to keep everybody on a positive note. So now I would like to ask you, where are some places where should we have great leadership? Just shout them out or tell them out. Where do you think today that we need great leadership?
Families.
Where at?
Families.
Family. Okay. Where else?
In our personal lives.
Personal lives. Okay.
Church. Workplace.
Schools.
Nation.
Where at?
Our nation.
Okay. Okay, well, there's a lot of different places that we need great leadership, and you guys mentioned some of the same ones that I did in government, schools, and businesses, but the three top ones that I came up with that I think are so key and so important for us today, especially us that are professing to be Christians, of course, would be the home and in the church and in school. And there's one man here in church tonight that is kind of in all three of those places. And you can probably guess who that is, Arlen Knisley. So I think it's so important that we have that in the home, in the church, and in the school. Okay, now I would like to ask you, what are some of those character traits that we like to see in leadership?
First for me, and that's
vision, okay?
Not only where he's going, but where he's leading people.
Okay.
Courage.
Okay.
Compassion.
Humility.
Integrity.
Integrity.
Love.
Love. What was that?
Servant's heart.
Okay, servant's heart.
One who is following the greatest leader, the Lord.
The Lord. Follower of the Lord.
Someone who genuinely cares for the people he's leading.
Cares for the people.
And is able to help them succeed.
Help someone succeed.
A learner.
What was that one?
A learner.
Okay, a couple more that I have is ability to delegate, sense of humor, commitment, a positive attitude, creativity, think outside the box, and set an example, make others feel value, and lead with consistency. So I decided that for me, I think the three top ones would be honesty and integrity, and somebody with confidence, and someone that can inspire others. And we like to say that leaders are readers. And this one here is pretty serious, and it puts a lot of responsibility on us as leaders. Everything rises and falls on leadership. Well, I've got some Bible verses that kind of pertain to leadership, and I'm just going to read through these. And if you have a few more that you want to add afterwards, that's fine. Galatians 6:9, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. And I'm sorry I do not have the translation that these were from. Well, I forgot to read the paragraph before. Being a leader takes courage, discipline, determination. While a great leader can bring great success, it also comes at the cost of being judged and overwhelmed. The Bible speaks of so many wonderful leaders and how God blessed them for their work. There are many verses and scriptures that God spoke to encourage men and women who choose to step up and lead. If you're striving to be a leader, or if you need inspiration along the way, these Bible verses about leadership should help. Hebrews 13:7, remember your leaders who spoke the word of God to you, consider the outcome of their way of life, and imitate their faith. Isaiah 41:10, so do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. I'm sorry, that was James 1:12. James 3:1. Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. James 4:10, humble yourselves before the Lord and he will lift you up. I'm going to say a little bit more about humility after I finish reading these scriptures. Jeremiah 1:5, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. John 3:30, He must become greater and I must become less. Matthew 7:12. So in everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and prophets. And I think this is at least in part where the golden rule comes from. And I'm going to say a little bit more about that later as well. Matthew 20:26. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. There is so much that we can learn from this verse about being a servant first and during and all the time. Philippians 2:3, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Philippians 2:4, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. Philippians 4:13, I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Proverbs 4:23, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. I get John Maxwell's Minute with John Maxwell every day into my email. And he said something the other day that I've not forgotten and I probably never ever will forget it. And I think of a couple of ministers in a couple other churches that some of my family go to. And he said it's like this: no matter our position in leadership or how much we think that we know, or if we think we're on the top, we are only one bad action or one step away from destroying everything. So we need to be on the guard and we need to be careful. Proverbs 22:29. Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. They will not serve before officials of low rank. 1 Timothy 3:2. Now the overseer is above reproach, faithful to his wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, and able to teach. 1 Timothy 4:8. For physical training is of some value, but godliness has value of all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. Timothy 4:12, don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, in purity. Timothy 2:15, do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a worker who does not need to be ashamed and who correctly handles the word of truth. Psalm 37:5, commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will do this. Romans 8:28. And we know that all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Proverbs 27:23-24. Be sure you know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds. For riches do not endure forever, and a crown is not secure for all generations. I had to think of that verse that talks about we need to remember that the devil is like a roaring lion going to and fro and seeking to kill, steal, and destroy. And I know that sometime in business, I have a lot of people that come to me with some ideas, and I'm always very careful because I don't want to bring something into our group of people that would hurt someone, or we just got to be really careful when somebody comes to us with a new idea, or we need to think it through. Mark 10:42-45. Jesus called them together and said, You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. Whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. What a great example that Jesus showed us for servanthood. John 13:13-17. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Titus 1:7-14. Since an overseer manages God's household, he must be blameless, not overbearing, not quick-tempered, not given to drunkenness, not violent, not pursuing dishonest gain. Rather, he must be hospitable, one who loves what is good, who is self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. He must hold firmly to the trustworthy message as it has been taught, so that he can encourage others by sound doctrine and refute those who oppose it. For there are many rebellious people full of meaningless talk and deception, especially those of circumcision group. They must be silenced because they are disrupting whole households by teaching things they ought not to teach, and that for the sake of dishonest gain. One of Crete's own prophets has said it: Cretans are always liars and evil brutes and lazy gluttons. This saying is true. Therefore rebuke them sharply, so they will be sound in faith and will pay no attention to Jewish myth or to merely human commands of those who reject the truth. So those are some of the Bible verses that, and there's one more here that I would like to say, 1 Corinthians 10:12, and this might be totally out of the context, but it has helped me a lot of times, and the verse is, wherefore let him that think as he stands take heed lest he fall. Do any of you have a Bible verse that you know off top of your hand that you would like to read or quote that has anything to do with leadership?
Jesus, in his high priestly prayer, said, "Those you gave me, I have kept for your name."
Okay.
Concerned for those that he would lead.
Okay, very good. Anybody else?
Proverbs 16 says, "Better a patient man than a warrior, a man who controls his temper than one who takes a seat."
Very good. Yep, we have to keep our temper in control. Absolutely. Okay, accountability. If we don't have accountability, can go in all kinds of different directions. Okay, well, I said I'm going to say a little something more about the golden rule. That was the Matthew 7:12 verse. Author unknown, I don't know where it came from, but think about these things as pertaining to the golden rule. And some of these things might not pertain that much to leadership, but I think it's good advice for all of us. If you open it, close it. If you turn it on, turn it off. If you unlock it, lock it up. If you break it, admit it. If you can't fix it, call in someone who can. If you borrow it, return it. If you value it, take care of it. If you make a mess, clean it up. If you move it, put it back. If it belongs to someone else, get permission to use it. And if it's none of your business, don't ask questions. Well, when we came here 15 years ago, we had went through a church split. We had a lot of difficulties in the churches we were at, and I guess me and my wife were pretty gun-shy about any church leadership. And there was several men in this church that totally turned that around for us. And one of those was David L. Miller. You've probably heard me tell the story before, but when we came out here to see about moving here, it was really tough to make a decision. And I'll never forget the second time I came out here, I met with David L. and David Yoder. And I think it was about 2 days after I had gotten home, I received a phone call, and it was David L., and he just wanted to let me know that they're thinking about us and they care about us. He didn't say, oh, please move here or anything. He just wanted us to know that they care about us. And that really meant a lot to me, and I've never forgotten that. And then when we came here, tonight came up about humility over and over and over. And there was a man here that was the leader of the bishop at the time, and that was David Yoder. And I wish he was here tonight, because he restored our faith in a bishop and a leadership in the church. And I just want to thank the entire team and all the leaders in this church, because I know that you do many, many things behind the scenes that we're not aware of. And I just want to publicly thank all of you for what you do and the integrity that I sense from you and the care. And now that David has stepped back and let Dwight and Karen go forward, I just want to thank you for what you're doing and your leadership. And I know that when Rachel's father passed away and we came home, and I think it was a week or two later that Dwight and Karen invited us over to their home for a meal, and that just felt so good. So I just really appreciate the leadership in this church. Well, I know that we talk quite a bit about an humble leader, and I've got some things here I'm going to read about an humble leader. I've noticed 10, and this is came from a ministry somewhere by a Mosey Y. Lee. I've noticed 10 common traits of a leader who demonstrate humility in contrast to those who demonstrate pride. As we guard our hearts against pervasive allures of pride, and for the leaders especially, the toxic temptations of power, it's good to reflect on which of these traits mark our own lives. Humble leaders tend to share their resources, whether in want or in plenty. Arrogant leaders tend to hoard their resources, unwilling to share unless they get something in return. Humble leaders tend to be bridge builders, refusing to demonize or neglect the other, Arrogant leaders tend to work alone, refusing to partner with others, especially those who hold differing views. Humble leaders tend to ignore gossip, being wise enough to know there's always another side to the story. Arrogant leaders tend to spread and entertain gossip, always wanting to hear the worst of others to make themselves feel better. And this is one point that I believe that this church has a very strong, I'm not sure how to put it into words, but I appreciate so much that I hear almost no gossip in this church. And I think that is so good. We have much to be thankful for in that. And I just applaud all of you for that. Humble leaders tend to be kingmakers without clamoring to be kings themselves. Arrogant leaders tend to be attention seekers, preferring to burn bridges or arrive with guns blazing if they don't get their way. And now that I think of it, Maxwell also talks about in your daily walk, see how many people that you can build up. It's really easy to tear somebody down, but let's see how many people that we can build up. And I know in the business world, if you can't think of anything else to say, you can say you have real nice hair or you got a nice shirt on today, or we can always find something good about somebody. Humble leaders tend to give the benefit of the doubt, knowing that nobody is always at their best. Arrogant leaders tend to assume the worst, unable to see the logs in their own eyes. Humble leaders tend to appreciate nuance. I'm not even sure what that word means. Believe it or not, I did go to public school until halfway through seventh grade, but there's a whole nother story about that. Since they know they've been wrong many times, arrogant leaders tend to be exceedingly black and white, unwilling to consider contrary views. Humble leaders tend to be empathetic, often prioritizing people over ideas. Arrogant leaders tend to be rigid, unable to receive constructive criticism. Humble leaders tend to welcome accountability, for they know how much they need it. Arrogant leaders tend to reject accountability, finding it a nuisance or a waste of time. Humble leaders tend to own up to their mistakes, since they know they're far from perfect. Arrogant leaders tend to blame others for their shortcomings or failures, unwilling to acknowledge their own sinful tendencies. Christ, the perfect leader, perhaps this list overwhelms you. How will I ever become a humble leader? You wonder. But the beauty of the gospel is that in Jesus, we already have the perfect model of humble leadership. And he's not just the role model to look up to. He's the image we're being conformed to by the power of the Holy Spirit within us. Jesus shows that the humble leadership starts at the cross. Whoever would be great among you must be your servant. And whoever would be first among you must be your slave. Even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Matthew 20, 26 through 28. A servant leader who stooped to wash faceless feet flips the world's idea of leadership on its head. He shows us the way is up. The way up is down, and the last will be first. In his kingdom, self-ambition leads to death, while serving others to the point of death leads to life. Well, I know that sometimes we come together and uh, And we maybe speak to one group or one set of people in the church, and maybe some of the younger ones up front here don't get a whole lot out of the evening. So I have chosen tonight, I've got a couple little stories here that I'm going to read, and hopefully you will plant some of these leadership qualities in your life, or that you will think about these as you go on through life. And there's not really a lot of children up front here, but I guess we're going to go ahead and read them anyhow, and hopefully we can all learn together. So I'm going to ask you, once I get through the story, what was the leadership that you've seen in this story? I love the following leadership story of Abraham Lincoln, who became the sixth president of the United States. He was once traveling in a stagecoach with a military man, a colonel, from the state of Kentucky. After riding a number of miles together, the colonel took a bottle of whiskey out of his pocket and said, "Mr. Lincoln, won't you drink with me?" Mr. Lincoln replied, "No, Colonel, thank you. I never drink whiskey." They rode together many more miles and had a very nice visit. The gentleman from Kentucky reached into his pocket and brought out some cigars. He said, "Now, Mr. Lincoln, if you won't drink with me, won't you take a smoke with me?" Mr. Lincoln replied, "Now, Colonel, you are such a fine, agreeable man to travel with. Maybe I ought to take a smoke with you, but before I do so, let me tell you a little story, an experience I had when a small boy." This was the story. "My mother called me to her bed one day when I was about 9 years old. She was sick, very sick, and she said to me, 'Abe, the doctor tells me I'm not going to get well. I want you to promise me before I go that you will never use whiskey or tobacco as long as you live.' And I promised my mother I never would. And up to this hour, Colonel, I have kept that promise. Now, would you advise me to break that promise to my dear mother and take a smoke with you?" The colonel replied, "No, Mr. Lincoln, I wouldn't have you do it for the world. It was one of the best promises you ever made. And I would give $1,000 today if I had made my mother a promise like that and kept it as you have done." So what's the lesson in this story?
Keep your word.
Keep your word. A leader has to keep their word. Dwight can't come in here one Sunday and tell us something and then 2 weeks later tell us something completely different. So a leader has to keep their word. I like to say that a man is only as good as his word. Okay, I have a couple more little stories here. There was a place in a remote village far, far away called the Palace of 1,000 Mirrors. Imagine a palace with 1,000 mirrors. A happy and energetic little puppy who lived in this village had heard of the palace and decided to pay a visit. When he arrived, he playfully bounced up the steep stairs to the open door of the house. He looked through the door with his ears lifted high and his tail wagging very fast. He was surprised because through the door he found 1,000 other happy dogs just like him, wagging their tails just as fast as he was. He gave a great big smile and found the other 1,000 dogs smiling right back, which made him smile even bigger. And the bigger he smiled, the faster he wagged his tail, and they smiled just as big, wagged their tails just as fast, and were just as warm and friendly as he was. He thought to himself as he was leaving the palace, "This is a wonderful place. I must come back and visit again." Same village was an older dog, quite frankly, a fairly grumpy dog. He also decided to visit the Palace of 1,000 Mirrors. As he approached the door with his sad head hung low, he looked up and found 1,000 other grumpy and unhappy dogs staring back at him. He growled and he was frightened by the other dogs growling right back. He quickly left and said to himself, "This place is not very friendly and a bit terrifying. I won't ever go back." So what's the lesson in this story? People will reflect your attitude, absolutely. Whatever we display will often filter into the group that we are leading, so be positive. And I'm not saying this to brag or anything, but when our business kind of started taking off, you know, some people outside of our group said that there's one thing that they really enjoy or like about our group, and that is that we're always positive. Yes, there are times that we need to have our little group meetings in the back room where things are not so positive, but in the front of a group of people, you need to be friendly, you need to be happy. Just like if Arlen would welcome the students in the morning with a grumpy or a sad look on his face, you know, it would kind of set the tone for the entire day, or even a father in the home. So it's so important that we're happy and that we're excited and that we're positive. I've got one more story, and this one might be the most important one. The story is told of a man whom the store owner, Mr. Miller, was bagging some potatoes for. This man noticed a small boy who he described as hungrily eyeing a basket of freshly picked green peas. He said he was delicate to the bone and feature, ragged but clean. The man was looking over some of the new fresh produce on his way out when he overheard the conversation between Mr. Miller and the ragged boy. "Hello, Barry, how are you today?" The hungry boy replied. "Hello, Mr. Miller, fine. Thank you. Just admiring them peas, they sure look good." Each time the little boy would come to the store, the conversation would have a similar tone. He would ask him how he was doing and how his mom was. She was sick, and they just didn't have much at home, and his hungry young boy's attention was always on the fresh produce. Mr. Miller would ask if Barry would like to take some home. Barry would reply, "No, sir, got nothing to pay for them with." And Mr. Miller would say, "Well, what if you to trade me for some of those peas?" Barry would say, "All I got's my prize marble here." "Is that right? Let me see it." Mr. Miller would take a careful look at it and compliment the boy on his prize marble. "Hmm," Mr. Miller would say. "Only thing is this one is blue and I sort of go for red. Do you have a red one at home?" The little boy would say, "Not exactly, but he had one sort of like it." Mr. Miller would send the boy home with the marble and the peas and asked him to bring the red marble back when he found it. Mrs. Miller, the store owner's wife, came back to help the man looking at the produce with an ear towards the conversation of the store owner and this little boy. With a smile, she said, "There are two other boys like him in our community. All three are very poor. Jim, Mr. Miller, loves to bargain with them for peas, apples, tomatoes, or whatever. When they come back with the red marbles, he decides he doesn't like the red marbles and sends them back with a bag of produce searching for another color." Years later, Mr. Miller had passed away. The man who had witnessed his kind act happened to be in town the night of his viewing. The friends he was visiting wanted to attend, and this man decided to join them. As they arrived and waited in line, offering condolences to the family of this generous man, ahead of them in line were three finely dressed men. One was in an army uniform, and the other two in nice dark suits with white shirts, and all were very professional looking. The three young men approached Mrs. Miller, standing composed and smiling by her husband's casket. Each of the young men hugged her and then kissed her on the cheek. They spoke briefly with her and moved on to the casket. Her light blue, misty eyes followed them one by one as each man stopped briefly and placed his own warm hand over the cold, pale hand in the casket. Each left the morgatory, wiping his eyes in recognizable sorrow. The man's turn came to meet Mrs. Miller. He reminded her of the story she told him so long ago about her husband's generous bargaining with the marbles. With her eyes glistening, she took the man's hand and led him to the casket. Those three young men who just left were the boys I told you about, she said. They just told me how much they appreciated the things Jim traded them. Now at last, when Jim could not change his mind about the color or the size, they came to pay their debt. Mrs. Miller said, "We've never had a great deal of wealth of this world, but right now Jim would consider himself the richest man in Idaho." With loving gentleness, the story is told. She lifted the lifeless fingers of her deceased husband. Resting underneath were these three exquisitely shined red marbles. So what's the moral of this story?
Kindness.
Yeah, that man displayed a great kindness to these boys. Well, hopefully tonight you will think about three things, and I'm sure in the home that you grew up in, it's probably already close to you anyhow, but always do what you say you will do. Think and be positive. And be a very kind leader. And if we will do those three things, it will go a long ways in our life. Well, I'm almost to the end of what I have. I'm going to open it up. Is there something that any of you would like to say about leadership tonight? Marvin.
Story, our lives are a story, and so
always try to lift people up, take them to a better place. I know that recently somebody heard one of the people on our team tried to tell a group of people to go do something or achieve a level in something that he had never done before. And he came across as kind of, it wasn't very nice because he was trying to tell people to go do something that he had never done. And so my son sat down with him and had a nice conversation with him to be careful that we always are kind and that we're not. You can praise someone to success, but to try to push someone to success isn't ever going to go very good. Anybody else have something you'd like to share about leadership? Gary. Very good. Okay, I've got a couple little things and then I'm going to be done. One of John Maxwell's quotes this week was, and this can almost be a tongue twister, your talk talks and your walk talks, but your walk talks a lot louder than your talk talks. A poem that I found, My Influence, is the title of the poem, and it said the author is unknown. My life shall touch a dozen lives before this day is done. Leave countless marks of good or ill ere sets the evening sun. This, the wish I always wish, the prayer I always pray, Lord, may my life help others' lives. It touches by the way. That's all I have. Turn it back over to you, William.